And you're very welcome back to the programme. Pete Rose, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm doing good, yeah. It's a bit cold out there. But...
Now, you are in front of the mic, but normally you're twiddling the knobs for others, are you?
Well, yeah, usually I'm the sound engineer in Greenland, so most of the time I'm behind the desk and other people are singing towards me.
So you like that documentary, The Backing Singer, now it's your time to shine.
Well, I don't know if it's my time to shine. I just think it's a good cause to shine for and the people who put their time in.
And that's what where we're going with this, because you are going to sing for us live. But give us the how this came about and who's involved.
Well, basically, this is a social experiment that I had thought of about a year ago. And I approached a guy called Jeremy Howard last Christmas. And it was just too late to form. So I got in touch with Jeremy early this time, and we worked through a couple of ideas, and the idea was to form a song, cover a classic Christmas song, that we could, with no budget, with no money behind it, with no commercial backing at all, could we market it on Christmas Spirit to see if it's still alive, to help charities at their hardest time of year, where their publicity budget would cost quite a lot because advertising costs a wee bit more at Christmas. So Jeremy was all on for it, and we pulled in Marie McTeague to do the piano, and she was more than willing to give her time for free. And then a guy called Mick O'Connell from the Nerve Centre came and helped us with the recording for the video.
And the charities in question, and you go a hard, long way to find charities that do, all charities do great work, but these particularly and locally as well. St. Vincent de Paul Ireland, the Samaritans, the Northwest Simon Community and the Donegal Hospice. That's helping people maybe who can't afford Christmas, people who can't afford a roof over their head.
Yeah.
And the great work the Donegal Hospice do, which we all know as well. So, fantastic charities. So then, how do people contribute to this cause then?
Basically, the YouTube video, in the description of the YouTube video, when watching the video, it tells you everything to do. In the description of the video, there's the links to the websites themselves. And what we're asking people to do is to use one of the hashtags that we have put on the video, like Is Christmas Spirit Still Alive? Or I Believe? And to put that in their description when they donate. They don't have to. We're not trying to track the donations. What we're trying to do is we're trying to generate the publicity for the charities that otherwise they would have to pay for at this time of year. We want to make sure that St. Vincent de Paul families who are in need of Christmas, like they do great work all through the year, but at Christmas time especially, to try to help a couple of families out at Christmas. The Northwest Simon, to try to help people who are maybe on the streets at Christmas, especially at Christmas, when maybe they don't have family or they're finding it tough. The Donegal Hospice as well, who do such great work up there and don't get half the credit they deserve. Mm. And the Samaritans, which is have kind of been far removed from publicity, have kind of went online, who are still a very active charity with everything, you know, helping people with... suicide thoughts and, you know, just generally anything that they can do, they're willing to help. So,
and you know, we perhaps the spirit of Christmas is lost to some extent. It is a very commercial enterprise.
Well, it's focused on something I hear all the time.
It's focused on normally what you get rather than what you give.
Exactly.
Often, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the things that we tried to do before we did this was, we tried to see what people thought about Christmas Spirit, and the mass majority of feedback that I got was that it was dead, that people focus more on material things than they do about having a family member there or having them all together or the small gestures that make Christmas worthwhile. Like, there's a lot of people that I know myself this year. There's 8 people this year that I know directly or indirectly that won't have a family member there because they've lost them or they've taken their own lives or they've been killed in an accident. Mm. And
I think, you know, when you have stuff is perhaps when you give less thought to Christmas or marriage, because if you are dependent on St. Vincent de Paul, if you are dependent on the Samaritans or the Northwest Simon Community, it's the little things do mean a great deal.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you do have things, you know, that's maybe when you lose that Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Not everyone does, but some of us are guilty of that.
People lose sight maybe sometimes of what's most important, you know, having healthy people around you, having family members there. I mean, it's all well and good giving presents, don't get me wrong. There's nothing nicer than waking up when Santa Claus has been and you've got something nice for Christmas. But all I'm asking from people is to give it a second thought of people who may be struggling this Christmas more than probably ever. You know, it's cold outside. There's going to be people on the streets. The extra €5 that you're going to spend on a takeaway pizza or whatever it was can really make a difference to somebody. You know, it can feed them on Christmas Day. It could get them somewhere to stay.
It can help a family. There are four of you involved, as you say. You're singing for us unaccompanied today, which is fantastic as well. But people can... How will they track down this video on YouTube? What's the best way to
The best way to do it is you can search it by Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas charity video, or you can search it by the hashtag, which is Christmas Spirit Still Alive. It's on the Ingrain and Theatre Facebook page. It's on your Facebook page. I'm trying to get as many people to share it as I possibly can to generate the publicity that the charities need.
And this is not like you's looking for credit. It's not like the person making a donation is looking for credit. There's not going to be a massive ceremony to hand over checks and what have you, which is a fantastic thing to do. This is it's a reminder that if you want to help someone, maybe sacrifice a little thing yourself. If you want to help someone, you can do it and keep the Christmas spirit alive and maybe get back to what it's supposedly all about, traditionally.
Basically what we want to do, we didn't want to track the donations because we wanted people to be free to make their own decision that maybe on Christmas Eve they have €20 that they could spend on something else and go in to the charity of their choice. That's why we give them four charities to pick the one that maybe they've encountered in their lives or, you know, maybe they're fond of or whatever it is, to make that donation to the charity of their choice. And it's a kind of a case of we're just... The guys behind this video were extremely humble and, you know, I'm doing this because I think we can do some good. And I think that it's well worth it at Christmas if I can step out from behind the desk and Jeremy can get behind the camera and Mick can get behind the computer and Marie gets behind the piano. When we can do this, I mean, even if it raises €500, that's €500 that they didn't have. That's €500 that can help a family, keep somebody off the streets, maybe a small bouquet of flowers with somebody in the hospice. Whatever it takes.
It's brilliant. I love it. Jump seats, though, because your equipment, your microphone is here. So this is Pete Rose. You can search the hashtag, Is Christmas Spirit Still Alive? Or search on YouTube, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Okay. This is Pete Rose performing live for us.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. And from now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. And from now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star up on the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas. Now.
That's beautiful, Pete. Thanks so much for that. So you can check out the hashtag Is Christmas Spirit Live, or search on YouTube, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. We've linked the video, and part of the experience is the video, isn't it?
It is. It's sharing the video so that we can try to generate the Christmas spirit. I mean, it's already, within 2 hours, it reached New York.
Ah, brilliant.
I was very, very shocked with it. So.
Best of luck, Pete, and the rest of you involved. It's a lovely idea. Okay, moving on the programme now, and Rasputin of the Bronx, the Irish man they couldn't kill. It's a new documentary. Its actual name is Name Your Poison, and it's being launched this Christmas on TG Cahir, and I'm delighted to say its director, Paddy Hayes, joins me on the programme now. Paddy, good morning.
How's every bit of you?
It's all fine, thank you, Paddy, and I hope the same with you. Right, tell us about this character, a very interesting man indeed.
He was... Mike Malloy was his name. He is a Donegal man who fell on hard luck, I guess, when he moved to the States during the Prohibition era. And four kind of reprobates decided they would take out life insurance on this poor, innocent immigrant and try to kill him. And they tried to kill him.
And why?
And they tried to kill him, and they failed to kill him.
And many, many times indeed. And why was he such a target?
He was a target, I guess, because he was an innocent abroad, you could say, to some extent. He was from Donegal. That came out in the Cork case when the guys who tried to kill him were actually caught. So perhaps, you know, he may not have had the language, who knows. And also, it seems like he had a terrible drink problem. So he kind of fell off the back of the herd of the Irish immigrants, you know. He wasn't hanging out in the South Bronx where all the Irish were. He was a little bit more north where it was more Italian, actually. And he ended up drinking in a watering hole owned by an Italian. It was a speakeasy, you know. The drink was illegal at the time. Mm. So also money was hard to come by. So when these Italians... when he walked in their door, they saw him as a soft target. He was a drinker. He had no fixed abode. Perhaps they asked him, has he any family in New York? And discovered that he might be vulnerable to disappearing, if you like. So they tried to kill him kind of surreptitiously so that there'd be no suspicion, you know. So they tried to poison him with drink, with food, and various other nefarious ways of trying to kill him.
Up to 20 times by some accounts. How did he avoid death so often? Were the people trying to kill him perhaps not the brightest of individuals? Was he incredibly lucky, or was he incredibly skillful?
Probably not skillful. He was very tough, and he was a big man, a tough... Donegal man, no more than Anthony Malloy, the Donegal football captain, who in fact goes on this journey to New York to try and discover who this guy was. Mm. So he's a big man, tough man, hard to take down. But the guys who tried to kill him, you could say, were like the gang who couldn't shoot straight, because they first gave him regular alcohol, so he'd get a bit sauce, and then they give him wood alcohol, which is poisonous. You know, a small juice glass of wood alcohol is enough to blind you. But what they did was, by giving the alcohol, regular alcohol first, it occupied all the sites, the metabolic sites, so the poison, when they gave it to him, couldn't work.
And do we know that once their efforts were, you know, fruitless the first couple of times, why do they persist with this man? Surely they could have acquired another target.
It's a very good question, actually, and one of the interviewees in New York addresses it. I suppose to fool someone into signing a life insurance form isn't that easy. You need to get the right person who's happy to participate that under inebriation. So that's probably one aspect of it. But another aspect to it is, it almost became an insult to these guys that this guy just wouldn't die. So they kept coming up with these more crazy ideas to try and kill him without arousing suspicion. So I think it just became almost a challenge to them.
Now, I don't want to spoil this for anyone, because what I love about documentaries is how the story unfolds. Even if it's a character that you know, like Escobar or something, you don't want the format of... I don't want to ruin it for anyone, effectively. But give us an idea of the style of the documentary.
Well, we're a little bit tongue-in-cheek, let's be honest. We dramatically reconstruct all these attempts that they tried to kill him. And it's kind of played for laughs. To be honest, because it's such an outrageous story, you know. The kicker for the documentary is Anthony Malloy. He sees this insert on the British program QI, with Stephen Fry, where they talk about the Rasputin of the Bronx, this guy from Donegal, Col Molloy, who was indestructible. And Anthony kind of tongue-in-cheek says he prides himself on being the toughest Molloy on the planet. And when he sees this guy who they can't knock down...
He wants to track down his rival, so to speak.
Yeah, like Finn McCool. You know?
Yeah, excellent. It sounds unbelievable. As it happened, there was a trial, wasn't there, in the end? And that's where I presume you're getting a lot of your detail.
Oh, absolutely. And the irony is, there's an hour-long documentary on this Donegal man who probably most of your listeners would not have heard about. And probably nobody would have heard about him, only the guys got caught. They started squabbling amongst themselves. And actually, they were sent to Sing Sing prison. And in fact, we went over to Sing Sing to film, and we went into the room where these guys got the electric chair. So it's a bit of a grisly tale.
You had sort of been immersed in this story, and I presume at some level you get to really know the characters involved, when you walked into the room that four of them met their eternal reward, probably in a southerly direction, did you get a sense of history in there?
You did, yeah. But it's actually, to be honest with you, the overriding sense I got in there was kind of was quite grisly. Like, the prison officer there told us about there was scratch marks on some of the electric chairs of people gasping for life. So actually, my overriding feeling was a sense of horror, actually. Even though these guys deserved what they got, you know, maybe Molloy got his revenge in the end that they tried to kill him 20 times and these guys were dead inside 90 seconds.
What became
of... Without question the sense of history, but I was horrified too.
Yeah, what became of Molloy? Was he interned in America? Was he returned home?
He was interned in America in a pauper's grave that's unmarked, which is very sad. He was dug up by the forensics when they were making their case for...
toxicology tests, presumably.
Exactly, yeah. And they just put him back in an unmarked grave. However, we do, in the documentary, discover a little memoriam to him in Manhattan, in fact, done by a homeless guy. And that is the kind of the tribute, and, you know, Molloy beyond the grave lives on, but nobody's heard of the four guys who tried to kill him. So there is a kind of a bittersweet ending, if you like.
Some of these guys really did go to great lengths to try and expedite his demise, and that's all chronicled in this documentary. It sounds intriguing. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's uniquely, maybe for a documentary, it's a very funny tale, to be honest. But there's also a serious side to it, in that the sadness of migration, people who fall off the back of the herd and they take to the drink. And that's a common tale. You often hear it in immigrants to England, that they hit the drink, but you don't hear it so much in America. We like the story of the Kennedys and the Fords and the people who succeeded. This guy represents all the immigrants who, you know, fell between the cracks. And maybe we like to say the Irish kind of have a good sense of community and look after each other, but this is a story where they didn't, in fact, look after each other, you know?
And not only did he fall between the cracks, but then it was exploited for having done so.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, it's going out on TG Car on the 28th at 9:30, and I suggest you tune in and you'll get a little bit of poignancy, but a little bit of laugh as well.
Excellent. It sounds fantastic. The whole setup, the whole story, and Anthony's involvement, it sounds intriguing, as I say. I can't wait to see it. Paddy Hayes, director of Name Your Poison, thank you so much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you indeed.
Right, so we were reading during the week about the tipping culture in America and calls for, you know, calls for the tipping culture to be sort of somewhat played down a bit and instead wages to increase. It's the way it works over there, I think. And we're going to discuss that very shortly on the programme. In fact, we'll do it right now. We are joined by Donald Doherty from the beautiful Harry's Restaurant in Bridgend. Hi, Donald.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Very good. I'm sure yous are flat out, are yous, at this time of year? And all year round, actually.
Yeah, no, this is a busy season now, especially the weekends with the Christmas parties. The Christmas market's going today with all the farmers selling their wares, where you can get your turkeys and everything else for Christmas and order those. So this is a busy weekend.
Brilliant. It's great for the industry. Let's talk about tipping. What is our culture in this country as far as you see it, Donald?
Well, I have a tips for me. These are things that you don't expect it for a start, right? The most important thing for any restaurant, especially in Donegal, is that somebody chooses to go to you and be a customer. I think that's the most important thing. After that, there's no doubt about it. People appreciate tips, and there's also no doubt about it. Younger people who are sometimes doing these jobs to head on to university or fund university, any extra penny they get is very much appreciated. You know, we're directed a little bit sometimes by looking over towards America, where this story has emerged from, where, you know, people get angry if you don't tip probably 15%, for example, whereas Ireland has never really been like that, and especially more rural where we are. Tips are not that generous. It's just not our culture as such, you know. So we would tend to give maybe no tips, or small tips would tend to be the average.
And in America, really, you get a basic wage, and I think from what I read, the majority of your income may be built up from tips, hence the importance on it.
I'm told in some places 100%, to be honest with you, absolutely. Wow. That they are working just for tips, and this leads to quite an aggressive service culture, which, to be honest, we would never want in this country, I don't think, personally, where it becomes a selling culture as opposed to what it should be, which for me is a service culture, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. But, my attitude is that, you know, if the person is nice and friendly and you want to tip them, then you tip them, you know, you shouldn't feel compelled to do so.
Absolutely not. And me personally, I like to see somebody going maybe an extra mile to solve a problem. Maybe you have a young child that needs something extra or something, or maybe you were going to choose something but you were kind of talking to something else and, my God, you loved it. Those extra mile elements are, for me, when tips become even more warranted, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, and if you ask for a special, say, well, listen, can I have a little bit extra of that? And they go, yeah, of course, no problem, we'll do that. You know what I mean? Where you feel like, right, you feel like a king.
To be honest, without the expectation of tips. Yeah. But I really think the customer is quite right to give a tip in that instance, where it is deserved.
And what about tourists coming on? Does it vary coming through the restaurants? Does it vary on what country they're from?
Definitely. With Europeans are definitely looking sort of 5-10% pretty much average. It's funny when you get the American who might be in the country his first day or two, and they would actually ask you, so what do I tip here, you know? And to them, basically, more often than not, I will tell them, listen, 10% is very generous around here. Now, I might be doing a disservice to others. What they actually do is they say, God, I appreciate that, and they leave 15% anyway. You know, but that kind of more affluent American customer had disappeared for a few years, whereas this year we've seen more of them back again. So they're still given at least 10, and their culture is 15%. So you would still see that off the sort of the few Americans that are still around.
Yeah, caller says, I tip all the time, but only if the service is good. In America, you're expected to tip, though the service may not be great, but when Americans come here, they're not as hot tipping here. My mum was approached not very nicely in Florida about how much they had left, 10%. The person was quite aggressive, and they say that's cheeky. That's exactly what you've been saying, really, so that's the way it is.
And I think especially Europeans, the Americans don't like serving a European, is what I'm told, because they're thinking this guy's not going to leave a good tip. I mean, that's the minute they're sitting down, so immediately they're not exactly fighting over your table over there.
Yeah, it's a hard way. Thank God we're not like that here.
There is another really important thing, and don't be afraid to ask in a restaurant, and that is making sure the staff are getting all the tips. For me, that is as important. I'm the only person in Harry's, both in the Shack in Port Stewart and Bridgend, that doesn't take a penny of tips, even though I work the floor and everything else. Every single penny, whether it be credit card or cash, goes to all our staff.
That's
and
nice.
I think it's no harm for people to ask and be sure. And don't be afraid to ask, because the only people with anything to hide here are the people not giving them to the staff.
All right, fair play.
And do check on that.
Looking forward to a busy 2016, Donal?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, this year, thank God, has been on the rise for the whole county. And I see that going forward next 3 or 4 years very positive.
Hopefully. We'll keep up the fantastic work. And we look forward to dining with you sometime, Donal.
Appreciate it, sir.
All right, God bless you. That's Donal Doherty there from Harry's Restaurant in Bridgend. Fionn Condren, hiya.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Very, very good indeed. Now, you're a very special person because you only just turned 13, but you're a level 4 precision driver. What is a level 4 precision driver?
Well, a level 4 precision driver, it's a recognised qualification within the Stunt Girls Ireland.
And you got your test when you were just 12.
Yeah, I began driving when I was 8 and built up my levels. I got my level 4 before I was just 12.
And why the interest in this? Has it come from your family or?
Yeah, well, most of my family are in the stunt business or do something in the film business. And my dad began driving at a very young age as well, and he does the motorbikes and he got into the stunts. And ever since I knew what he did, I really liked it and wanted to do it myself.
So say, for instance, there is a film being made, Fionn. I don't know how big you are, but let's just say it was for someone who was the same size as you. Are you qualified now to sort of take that job if it was offered to you?
Yeah, if it was offered to me, I'd have no problem doing it. I have my qualification.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And your friends must be dead jealous of you, are they?
Yeah, some of them are very jealous.
Well, I'm dead jealous of you. Who am I kidding? I'm talking about your friends. It's me. I'm not a bad Fionn. I was playing with remote control cars at your age. And so what kind of stuff can you do in the car then? I mean, what's your speciality?
Well, I do precision drifting. On my level 4, it was high-speed forward slalom, high-speed reverse slalom, high-speed forward 180s, reverse 180s, high-speed parallel park, box park, and yeah, I can do donuts as well and J-turns. And
wow, and you've already been taking part in a couple of some stuff, haven't you? Tell us what we've seen you in.
Yeah, well, I've been in a few different car shows. I've been in the Heatwave and a few other ones like the BC Stunt Drive car show. I've also worked on Vikings, Ripper Street. I have worked on a zombie film as well, The First Wave.
Uh-huh. Vikings, the TV show?
Yeah.
What were you doing that? Is that not from back in the... when Vikings were around?
Yeah.
You weren't... don't tell me you were doing donuts. Donuts and that, were you?
No, I was just getting killed off, like Vikings were coming in.
And oh, right, so it's not just in the cars. So you've got... so your dream, then, is to follow in your dad's footsteps and maybe do a... like, what is your big dream? Is it, like, to be involved in, filming a car chase in a Bourne Supremacy film or something? Or what would be your ideal gig?
Well, I would love to be able to, like, work on productions with my dad.
Yeah.
And be able to do car chases with him and be involved with my dad.
Listen, Fionn, you're a great lad. Thanks so much.
Yes.
Fair play to you. Thank you. That's Fionn Condren.